your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Great. So, hope we're all well fed and ready to experience this last few hours of this great conference. Had a lot of great speakers yesterday, and had a great presentation by Dr. Apsley today, and we're going to have some more great stuff. So, without any further ado, we'll bring back on Dr. Apsley.
Thank you, everyone. So we have been talking for this entire weekend about the dangers of Fukushima, and we've also now today gotten into the solutions for Fukushima as far as it relates to you and I. And as I said earlier, I'm heading the coordination and the organization of a group of specialist physicians that are going to be treating the sailors that were exposed to excessive levels of radiation during Operation Tomodachi. That was in March of 2011. And the sailors were mostly on the USS Ronald Reagan, but there were also other ships involved. And as we stand here at this moment, there are already dozens and dozens of these cases that, of these sailors that were exposed that already have cancer of various forms. And as I showed you earlier, there is a wave after wave after wave effect of what happens when you're exposed to either low, low levels of radiation over a long time period. There's certain waves that start coming up in sequence. Over the first 3 months, you might have immune disorders. Then as the years roll on, there's leukemia, lymphoma. Then as the years roll on, you might have thyroid cancer. And then you continue on, you might wind up with lung cancer at the 20-year mark. And it's very difficult to associate back that the cancer came from radiation. So the tendency would be, oh, that's just part of the fact that everyone in America is getting cancer. That's not because of radiation exposure. But I have already educated you all and educated the audience that will see this today on streaming and also in the future with DVDs. That is not true. The National Academy of Sciences has proven that 200,000 new cancers each year do come about because of exposure to normal background radiation, half man-made, half from the ground, 624 milligrams per year. That's a small dose. Normally, they talk about REMs, like 1,000 times the amount that can cause an instantaneous load of damage that eventually will wind up causing cancer. So that's another way that high doses of radiation, one-time exposure over 1 day, or let's say in the case of the sailors over a period of 2 weeks, and then no more after that, will come down with cancer. So what do? We've talked about what we do to prevent the radiation from doing further damage, but what about those people that have already got cancer? And I'm very, very honored today to talk to you and introduce to you my partner, Dr. Steve Hines. And I'm very honored that he and I are working together. Dr. Hines is one of the great educators in this country today. As a naturopathic physician, he practices in Mexico. He helps educate the doctors here in this country. He's written extensively. He's been on national radio shows. He's been on TV. And Dr. Hines has that special kind of what I've learned to love, that Texan kind of not only accent but character that just kind of invites you in, and it can hold your attention with enthralling stories about what reality is as to how cancer treatment should actually come down. So, as an example, when I was being taught by Dr. Hines, I was enamored by the fact that he had been using some of the most extensively advanced laboratories in the world to identify the natural substances, over 400 of them, that each patient can be tested for by way of simple blood test to find out exactly what natural substance, and also including chemotherapy, would be the most effective substance to treat their cancer. And it's used in other countries. It's used routinely in other countries, and Dr. Hines is one of the top experts in that field. And it was amazing that he found one of the most common chemicals that 40 years ago the pharmaceutical industry also identified in herbs and extracted it out and then used it as far as their patented formulas. The problem is what I've already talked to Jim here about, is that there's intelligent design in herbs. You don't find that in man-made substances. Intelligent design is amazing. Something from aloe that will kill cancer cells will immediately protect the healthy cells immediately around it. How does that work? Whereas when you're taking conventional chemotherapy, the chemotherapy will do the same thing. It'll kill the cancer cell, but it will kill healthy cells, particularly the immune system. The other area of expertise that Dr. Hines is one of the foremost leaders in the world about are the relationship between infections and cancer. In fact, it was Dr. Hines who introduced me to Tullio Simoncini, who had this very elaborate and developed experiential theory. In other words, he had hundreds of cases over 30 years to prove what he thought was the proper theory, that cancer is a fungus. Now we know that cancer isn't a fungus, but it's associated very often with fungus and with bacteria and sometimes, as we know, with viruses. So there are a large number of infections that if you... Well, let me put it to you this way, how Dr. Hines explained it to me. Cancer is supposed to be slow growing. But when you get your diagnosis, there's sometimes where it says it's highly aggressive, and it is. Well, why is that cancer so fast growing? And Dr. Hines, through his extensive years of experience in the field of infectious disease relationships with cancer, has shown, oh, there's got to be an infection involved. Sure enough, you treat the infection with standard antibiotics, and lo and behold, that patient just stabilizes almost overnight. The other area that is just enthralling, Dr. Hines just made a new recent breakthrough in this area, is where there's dental infections that are very difficult to detect. Now, what happens in the mouth is, especially around root canals, but it can occur from pulled teeth as well, little pockets of infection will set up with normal organisms like Candida albicans, and what they secrete will turn off our anti-cancer genes completely. P21, P27, and P53. We got to have those turned on in order to prevent the cancer from coming back. If those stay off because of an infection in the mouth, you got to find it, you got to take it out, and then those genes start turning back on again and you don't get the cancer back. Our problem in the eclectic, integrative, natural approaches to dealing with cancer has never been that we couldn't dissolve the tumors. It was to keep it from happening too fast and throwing the patient into a crisis because her body was already too weak, or to keep it from coming back after it was gone. And what we often, so in summary, I'll just finish up here. We really have a real gem here today on stage, and I'm just really pleased to introduce him. Please give a warm welcome to Dr. Steve Hines.
Thank you very much. Just one clarification. I'm a traditional naturopath, not a naturopathic physician. There is actually a difference. In Texas, it doesn't matter because we don't have a board for either one of them. A little closer. Okay. This is a picture of my office or clinic staff in Mexico on the left. On the right, that's my hot, smoking wife. I was doing a phone consult one day with an 80-year-old lady in Florida. And my wife called in. I said, excuse me just a minute. I put her on hold. My wife, I answered a question, and I came back on. And I said, that was my hot, smoke-in wife. If any of you ever seen Talladega Nights, you know what that is. So this little old lady in Florida kind of gets quiet and she says, "Your pot-smoking wife?" Before I could say anything, she says, "Hey, baby, it's okay with me." Really, it's pretty funny. So you can go on to the next slide there. I usually have my laser pointer, but I didn't bring it with me. So my light has gone out. One of the things that I noticed years ago, we have a clinic in Acuna, Mexico, where we treat all kinds of incurable type disease conditions. But we've always been fascinated by cancer. You know, lupus, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, all those things are very routine for us to successfully treat. But cancer's always been the great challenge. And sometimes, oh, great, thank you. Oh, wow. It works on the black, but not on there much. Okay, I kind of got it. Okay. So anyway, you know, we would win two or three cases in a row, and then we'd lose two or three cases in a row, and I really couldn't understand why some people got well and others didn't. But over the years, we made a lot of observations that took a while. In clinician world, you know, it's you watch, you run labs, you treat, you ask questions, you run tests again. It takes a while to prove what you think you're seeing. And so it took a while. But I had a lady come in one time that she had been treated in conventional fashion with chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, stem cells, bone marrow transplant. She was in very bad condition. And so she told me that this breast mass reoccurred about a month earlier. And at this time, literally a month after she was able to feel it, it was the size of a tennis ball. So it made me begin to think, how could a tumor grow that fast? Well, the good news is it cannot. Cancer cells, other than particularly in a male with testicular cancers, the germ cell line, I think, maybe is the only one that literally doubles every 2 or 3 hours. Other than that, cells take weeks to double or months to double. Most women, when they have a breast tumor the size of a marble, it's 10 years old. So the rate of mitosis of normal cells still holds true for the most part, even if that cell becomes malignant. So if a mammary cell in the breast replicates every 30 days, and it becomes malignant, well, one cell in a month becomes 2 cells, in a month becomes 4 cells, in a month becomes 8, beyond 16. Now, if they are estrogen receptor positive cells, estrogen is a growth factor. And depending on the presence of certain types of estrogen that are much more growth promoting than others, you could accelerate the growth. But no way on God's green earth are you going to make one cell become a tennis ball in a month. So when a woman calls our clinic in Mexico and says, "Oh my goodness, I've got the most rapidly dividing cancer on the planet," I say, good for you. It's not cancer. Now, there may be cancer involved. There may be a couple of cancer cells amongst the 55 trillion fungal cells or other infection involved. And often you can have cancer as a result of the environment created by an infection. And here are some of those infections. Which of these masquerade as cancer or cause cancer? Mycoplasma, mycobacteria, fungi or yeast. Yeast start out as a monomorphic form. They're not invasive particularly. And then if they become invasive, they become dimorphic, and they can actually invade tissues. And I, just to think about it for a moment, how does a mushroom start out? One spore on a piece of wet wood last night this morning, it's a fully formed mushroom that you could slice and put on your hamburger. Think about how fast that growth rate is. If you watched it in a microscope, it looks like it's foaming. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's going so fast, you can literally watch them dividing. So once a fungi becomes invasive, they can actually go into the tissue, start spreading the tissues apart, and they create a very hostile environment, which then can induce true malignancies. However, the malignant part of the mass is generally very, very small. Here we have tapeworms. This is not working. Oh, you can see it? I guess I'm at an angle. I don't see it well. Tapeworms. In Mexico, I've been told, where my clinic is, that 25% of the people that live in Mexico have what's called cysticercosis. It's misdiagnosed as a brain tumor. In fact, one of our staff has it. He started having seizures. It's just because they eat a lot of very cooked, poorly cooked pork. The pork parasite worm, when it starts wiggling its way into the brain, there's not a whole lot that's going to stop it if it's alive and it's able to travel. And they actually set up shop in your brain tissue, and they start having babies, and they make a tumor mass. Well, it's very, very common, and doctors in third world countries know that. In the United States and other developed countries, they tend to just go, oh, you got a glioblastoma. So, unfortunately, once you get one of those in your brain, there's not a lot you can do about it except take some effective praziquantel. It's also known as biltricide. It's a very specific agent for tapeworms. And kill the cyst or keep them from replicating. Otherwise, you'd probably have to have brain surgery, which most people don't volunteer for, if there's any other option. And usually they take some anti-seizure meds for the rest of their life, and that's kind of how you manage it. You have another one here, the spirochetes. This is Lyme disease, Leptospira, Treponema denticola. There's quite a few of them. HHV6 is a virus. Bartonella is also known as cat scratch disease or cat scratch fever. Everybody know Ted Nugent? Cat scratch fever, that's a real thing. And I actually had a case just last January, a gentleman from Texas who came to the clinic. He was in end-stage liver failure. We were told he had pancreatic cancer. He shows up at the clinic. His bilirubin is 38, which is really not just, you just don't live long with a bilirubin of 38. He was yellow as a daisy. His liver enzymes were in the thousands. And I took a drop of his blood and I put it on a microscope and I looked at it. And every single red blood cell had little dingleberries hanging off of it, which is classic Cocobacilli cat scratch fever. It was the worst case I'd ever seen. Not only that, when I crenated his red cells, spirochetes crawled out of every one of them. It looked like Medusa, just dozens of spirochetes coming every cell. And then the middle of the cell, which is always a dish, there's a, in the middle of a red blood cell, you have an area that's very thin. And so you do see a little light through them, but these actually had a defined ring, just like you took your wedding ring and stuck them in the middle of the cell. That is a protozoa called Babesia, also known as American malaria. Causes a lot of joint problems, causes hematological disturbances, iron levels that go grossly low, hematocrit go grossly low. Doctors can't figure out what's causing it. It's American malaria. This guy had Lyme disease, cat scratch fever, and babesia, and nobody caught it. In 7 months, he still had the bullseye rash on his back. And his wife first took him to her general practice doctor, looked at this rash on his back and said, I don't know what it is, here's some steroid cream. A couple months later, he starts having epigastric pain. They go to another doctor, and he does a CT scan and sees a tumor in his liver. She shows him the raised area on his back, and he said, I don't know what it is, here's a topical steroid. Then they go to oncology, showed the oncologist this big red rash on his back with a dimple in it, classic textbook Lyme disease. Oncologist says, I don't know what it is, but it's nothing to do with the cancer. Promptly gave him chemotherapy at that time as Billy Rubin was 7. Within 7 days, it was 32 to 38 when I saw him a few weeks later. And he was full out hepatic failure. Yet the pathology, when they tested the tumor, here in Texas, I won't mention the name of the astute university that did this, but that the results said tumor of pancreatobiliary origin. Yet the CT scan showed no tumor in the pancreas, only a tumor in the lung, liver, and in the lungs. And then it said, or possible lung tumor, mets to the liver. So they didn't have a clue what it was, but they actually had ignored this mass on his back, which was simply where he had been injected with it by a tick. I sent his blood off on Monday of the week I saw him, waiting for the test results back. I got them back on Friday in the afternoon. He died Friday morning. The lab results said maximum coccobacilli. This guy was misdiagnosed as cancer. What he had was cat scratch fever, which is very well known among infectious disease doctors to cause tumor masses, granulomatous masses. We see them all the time with people who have dental infections. The infection just keeps brewing and brewing in the sinus cavity until they have a tumor. Infections can cause granulomatous masses. And so I always question pathology. The best pathologist make mistakes. We have a human papillomavirus. There's H. pylori, schistosomiasis, which is another common parasite in the tropical regions. All 10 of those infections are known to either be misdiagnosed as cancer or to induce cancer. Head and neck cancers, we now know, are mostly caused by human papillomavirus. Men give it to women. Women get cervical cancers and uterine cancers. Men, we thought, got out of it unscathed. But now we know that's what causes a lot of esophageal cancers, is the human papillomavirus. So the question needs to be asked, if I knew what the infection was and I successfully treated the infection, would that make my cancer go away? Somebody ask that question. Very, very excellent, excellent thought. Glad that you asked that question, young Texas lady. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Because once a granulomatous mass has been created, which we have to pathologically explain what that is, it's really normal cells in an abnormal shape. So unless you cut it off and the body had to rebuild it, which it would do much quicker, otherwise it's going to take years for the body to digest away this odd-shaped mass, even though it may not be cancerous. But if we got rid of the infection, what we have seen oftentimes is the tumor stops growing. Because if you look at a tumor specimen under a microscope where they stain a slice of a breast tumor, for instance, you may see three or four cells actually light up with the dye. But that may represent 1% or less of the total mass. Well, so you have a mass the size of a golf ball with three cancer cells in it. So if you killed the infection, maybe the cancer, the environment that induced the cancer would be altered, and the cancer would just stop growing and give the immune system time to catch up. I have actually treated advanced breast cancers and lung cancers and colon cancers and liver cancers with antifungal drugs and herbs. So you've heard of Diflucan. Everybody know what Diflucan is, your common thing for yeast infection. Had a lady from Lubbock, Texas, came to the clinic. She had been through chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, etc. Tumor suddenly started growing like crazy. I knew it was too quick to be real cancer. We gave her an antifungal, and a month later, the tumor was gone. So an oncologist I was speaking to about this, he said, well, maybe Diflucan is an anti-cancer agent. Well, I guess that's possible. I've also done it with Sporinox. I've also done it with voriconazole. I've also done it with every herbal antifungal. So it is possible, I guess. If that be the case, it's sure a whole lot smarter than giving chemotherapy, isn't it? Give me 250 milligrams of Diflucan for a month for $20 and see if my cancer goes away. And frankly, that's what we recommend most people do. Before you go and get cut on and do radiation and all these elaborate things, why not do the simple, the obvious, the thing that does little of any harm, is take some antifungal medicine. See if the tumor shrinks. Oftentimes it will. There is a very famous breast cancer surgeon in, I think she's in Indiana or Illinois. She said that when a woman comes to her with a positive breast cancer diagnosis, she asks them to bring the tumor block or the slide from the pathologist who diagnosed it. And before she does anything else, she'll take that slide, give it to her pathologist, have him reread it. And in her words, most often, my pathologist does not agree. It is not cancer. Most often, my pathologist does not agree. It is not cancer. I had a woman in Lubbock, Texas, who had a breast mass. Went to oncology. They did a biopsy. Said it's cancer. Did a double mastectomy. I later saw her because she was concerned about a metastasis occurring, going to the lungs and the brain. So I said, what I would really like to see is the pathology report when they did the bilateral mastectomy. Well, she said, they didn't give it to me. I said, well, ask them for it. She asked them for it and asked them for it and asked them for it. And they wouldn't give it to her. And I said, well, you need to tell them that your attorney will be there to get it soon. Then so they gave it to her. It's hers. Well, we found out why they didn't want her to have it. Both breasts were analyzed, and there were numerous specimens from the breast. Both breasts, the pathology came back, no cancer at all. She went through a double mastectomy and didn't have any cancer. That is not uncommon. So for our clinic in Mexico, we're more interested in trying to figure out why someone got cancer, and is it even cancer, before we go chasing treatment regimens. Because you're not going to be very effective in treating something if you don't know what caused it, right? Shooting in the dark with shotguns. You know, even a small shotgun, if you get hit with it, it hurts. I like lasers. And I like to know what I'm shooting and what I'm shooting with. You can flip. There's another one. Here's one study of cat scratch. I particularly like to talk about cat scratch fever and relative to tumor masses, because one of the confirmatory tests for cat scratch fever is vascular endothelial growth factor. You probably know of VEGF. This is a signal that your brain induces if there is hypoxia in tissues of the body. And it says to the body, we need more blood vessels here so we can get more oxygen here. Tumors secrete VEGF. That's how they get blood supply. That's how they grow. Ironically, so does cat scratch fever. In fact, it looks like you just took your hands and your fingernails and just ripped them down the skin. You'll also see them, looks like stretch marks in inappropriate places. Other times there'll be little pustules where it looks like you had a mosquito bite and you just scratched it like crazy, but you didn't. It's got a lot of little capillaries to it. So, ironically, this is an infection that acts like a tumor mass, and it will create a tumor mass, and it'll do it very quickly. By the way, in the last 12 months, I've seen 3 cases of pancreatobiliary origin cancer that were actually cat scratch fever. So it's not uncommon. It's just very poorly understood. So here's a study. 786 lymph nodes biopsied, looking for cat scratch disease. 49.7% of those lymph nodes either had Bartonella or Mycobacterium. That's close to 50%. Probably should pay attention to that, right? So we don't do chemotherapy on people who actually don't have cancer. So I'm going to just stop right there and let you guys ask questions, because I probably have got the point across. Questions?
They can come up to this microphone right here.
Right here.
Just a quick comment. Dr. Hines, if a sailor on the U.S. Ronald Reagan was exposed to dramatic levels of radioactive iodine and their thyroid was nailed, thereby suppressing their immune system, would it not be possible that some of these cancers that are rising after the fact are associated with some of these same infections?
Yes, absolutely. Anything that's going to suppress your immune system is going to make you prone to succumbing to a common infection. None of these agents that I mentioned are uncommon. Probably everybody in this room has 2 or 3 of them. HHV6, HHV8, cytomegalovirus, human papillomavirus, they're everywhere. Why is it in some people it induces pathology and not in others? Immune system. If you get doused with enough radiation, number one, it's going to affect your thyroid. If your thyroid is dysfunctional, your immune system is dysfunctional. If we don't have a good immune system, we can succumb to fungal infections. I mean, just look at the conventional treatment model of cancer. What do they treat cancer with? Radiation, right? That's weird. Radiation induces cancer. We're going to use radiation to treat the cancer. Doesn't exactly make a lot of sense. But let me give you an idea. This has happened numerous times. A woman has a breast cancer. Insignificant amount, a BB size that shows up on a PET scan. They send it to biopsy and they said, oh, this is cancer. We've got to be aggressive with it. So they cut the breast off and then they do radiation on the breast, what's left of the breast. Where's the radiation beam going? Right through their lung, correct? How many cases of lung cancer secondary, actually not breast cancer, metastasized to the lung, but primary lung cancer hey, never smoked a cigarette. It's exactly where the radiation beam went through to treat the tissue around the mastectomy. Or their heart fails because it fried the pleura and they start leaking fluids around the heart. So radiation definitely induces cancers. It's done all the time in cancer research. So why wouldn't it induce cancers or immune suppression in people who are exposed to long-term levels of high background or acute levels, as in the Fukushima circumstance? Anything that's going to suppress the immune system is going to allow you to succumb to an infection, and that infection may then in turn cause a cancer. So yes, yes, yes on all points. Have a question?
After spending 2 days at this wonderful conference, it's becoming quite apparent that the rate of cancer is going to increase due to our environmental conditions. Could you kind of give a brief of best practices that you would say of how to approach if someone receives a diagnosis, some of the step 1, 2, 3 things that they should look for so that they are not taken down this trail of automatic cancer, lop it off, kill it, burn it, poison it?
Yes.
So your first would be?
First thing, the most important thing of all is dental infections. Root canal teeth, cavitated sockets. I have seen 6 cancers of the eye. All 6 had a root canal right there. I've seen 6 triple negative breast cancers. 5 of the 6, when we did a thermographic imaging, which is heat signatures for early detection of breast cancer, the right or left mammary meridian tooth, which is a lower canine or incisor.
Behind the eye tooth on the bottom.
Yeah.
And on the top, not the wisdom, but the back tooth are the ones that tie to the mammary gland.
And we saw they lit up like a Christmas tree with a white line right down to the triple negative breast cancer. And that's the one you do not want. That one is very, very difficult to treat, more so than estrogen-positive tumors. Rarely do I ever see a cancer patient who does not have root canal teeth. Now, does that prove that root canals are the primary cause of cancers? No. But there is such a consistent correlation, and the scans correlate with the tumor sites, with the eyes. Every one of them had a root canal right there. But they are so immune suppressive. The endotoxins leaching into the bloodstream are known to suppress 80 different enzymes that run the human body. Krebs cycle enzymes, urea cycle, ammonia cycle. So number one thing is find a biological dentist. You can go to our website, hopewellness.com or hopewellnesscenter.com. And there is a list of resources of dentists that we know do a great job. There are many out there, but we know 3 or 4 of them. As far as the radiation in the particular case that we're talking about now, where we're being deluged by a much higher level of background radiation than ever, this is a free radical inducing circumstance. So anything we can do to get rid of the uranium, the cesium, etc., out of our body is going to help detoxification. I think John has talked to you guys about the Z Naturals.
Zeolite. The nano zeolite.
It's not a zeolite. It is derived from a zeolite.
It's a nano. Yes?
It's
what we were told.
Yeah,
what's it called?
It's a... You can say it's a little microscopic trap that when it goes to the bloodstream, it actually does go into the cells.
It's a scrubber.
It traps toxins and metals. Z Naturals.
Oh.
It's not what you commonly know of as zeolites. And that's a long, long story.
As many of us are here, we know many people that are in the mass delivery system of medicine. Mm-hmm. We know many people who've gone through chemotherapy. Could you describe briefly how chemotherapy works and what's a very beneficial attribute to know about chemo and how it works quickly and what you should do after you have chemo?
Well, there's many types of chemotherapy, but in a classic sense, it's something that destroys rapidly dividing cells. We have a lot of new chemo. Technically, they're called chemotherapies, but they're not classic chemos. They're immune regulators, biological response modulators, receptor blockers, different than the classic is just the out-of-control fire that just burns up every cell in your body. And since cancer cells generally are the faster replicating cells, chemotherapy like 5-FU and cisplatin, adriamycin, they kill rapidly growing cells. So, but they also, what is the most actively rapid growing cell in your body otherwise? Your GI tract. Those cells turn over every 2 days. In men, the testicle, the germs, sperm cells turn over very rapidly, and their immune cells. Our immune cells, within the day after you do the first chemotherapy, white counts will usually go from 5,000 to 6,000 down to 1 or below after the first chemotherapy.
But doesn't chemo work pretty quickly, that if you detox and try to get it out of
it? Yeah, so we actually have built a model of how to integrate for those who just feel they absolutely have to do chemo because that's what everybody told me I should do and my kids are on me and I don't really want to do it. But a lot of families put pressure on mom or dad and they just give in even though they don't want to. They just feel obligated and the kids are mad at them. So we've built a process to accommodate those people and we've done a really good job of it, where we utilize the chemotherapy for the benefit, which is rapid shrinkage of a tumor mass, not necessarily the cancer, but the tumor mass. Sometimes it kills the cancer, sometimes it kills the fungi, which I'm a fungi. But I'm not a fungi. So along with wiping out whatever the mass is, it also wipes out your immune cells. That there is a time frame. You got 12 hours, 24 hours maybe, to where if you intervene, you can do some heroic things. So we had a guy that had lung cancer, colon cancer, lived in Del Rio, Texas. And he came over to the clinic. First couple of times, we prepped him for his chemo. We did what we call magic drips. That's, you know, magic is not M-A-G-I-C. It's not the magic kingdom. As someone rebuked me one time at our clinic, she says, I think it's very unprofessional that you're calling this a magic drip. And I said, why is that? Well, you know, like magic kingdom, it's magical. I said, no. It's an acronym. M-G-I-K. Magnesium, glucose, insulin, potassium. I wonder who that was. She says, oh, excuse me. So it is a way of driving antioxidant chemistry into the cell and also protecting the extracellular space, the cell membranes, etc., from the ravages of the chemotherapy. So you get the best of both worlds. Yes, you're going to get rapid tumor shrinkage, and we've actually been able to inhibit the dropping white count and the nausea. We've had people that were 3 months into treatment and still had not lost their hair. So you can do chemo smart or you can do it stupid.
What do you think about radiation?
I hate radiation. I would take chemo. You could blast me with 50 pounds of chemo before I'd ever let you near me with radiation.
So you think you can recover better from a chemo than radiation?
I can get chemo out of you and restore cell membranes, but radiation is just insane. It's like taking a T-bone steak, putting it on the grill, and leaving it for 5 days till it literally is ashes falling through the grill. There's nothing left to recover. It's fried. It's nothing. Crystals. So the answer is absolutely chemo over radiation. Radiation scares the living crud out of me. Yes, ma'am. You want to come up?
What do you do if you already have root canals?
What you have to do if you already have a root canal, which is everybody that we see with cancer, they have root canals. You must...
Well, this is to avoid getting cancer. I'm asking the
question. Are you saying...
I have root canals.
Okay, that's what I'm about to say.
Yeah. That I know
if you have a root canal already in your mouth, which is a dead, rotting carcass, dumping endotoxins into the tissues around it, all root canals are dead teeth. Yeah, they're endotoxins and exotoxins. They're byproducts of the metabolism of the bacteria that are living in that dead, rotting carcass that are under pressure, being pressed into the lymph system. You must go to a biological dentist. Hear me. Do not go to a molar mechanic, which is most. With all due respect, they're not trained in this. They're the ones who created the problem. They're not the ones who are going to solve it for you. You need a highly trained dental toxicology-minded dentist. There's plenty of them. If you go to IAOMT.org, that's International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, you must pull the infected, the root canal tooth. And IAOMT.org, which stands for the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. And look at the smoking tooth video. It's quite fascinating. If you have any question that mercury is toxic, it's astounding. And there's a video right on the homepage. But when it comes to root canals, the dentist has to pull the tooth and then remove the infected socket. Otherwise, the socket will cover over and trap what otherwise would be normal commensal flora of your mouth. So if you take a facultative aerobic organism, which is an organism that can live in an oxygen environment, and you deprive it of oxygen, so it's facultative, it can survive, but it morphologically changes into the beast from hell. So that which is normal flora, when you change its environment to stay alive, they begin to produce endotoxins and exotoxins, and they can shut down every enzyme in the human body. I've actually seen 28 Parkinson's patients totally resolve their shaking tremors by having a dentist open their upper right and upper left wisdom tooth sockets, cleaning out the pus. Where does the trigeminal nerve come from? Right down here over the TMJ, temporomandibular joint, and between the third and fourth molar, or the first and second, I always get the direction there. So if you have an infection in that wisdom tooth socket, 30 years ago you had those teeth filled. 94 out of 100 of those sockets cavitate. You don't feel it because the nerve's dead. It's just a little pocket of infection. And it's less than a millimeter or two from this nerve. So those endotoxins get pressed out under pressure of the CO2 gas from the bacteria. And then they get conducted up the nerve into the substantia nigra portion of the brain, where they inhibit dopamine metabolism. It happens a couple of three or four times a year. And that's just a socket where a tooth was pulled 30 years ago, not even an active root canal socket, just a socket. But if you remove the tooth and you leave the socket, you will get what's called a cavitation, which is what these wisdom teeth sockets are.
So after the tooth and the socket are removed, then what happens?
Well, up till very recently, there wouldn't be a lot else you could do but take a wild guess. There is a laboratory, full and fair disclosure, I am on the board, that will be back up and running soon, KS3Labs.com. KS3Labs If you go to the dentist and you have a lab kit from KS3 and you tell him you want to do a dental assay, when he removes that infected tooth or opens an infected socket, he can take a few drops of that fluid, put it in a vesicle along with a venous blood draw and maybe a finger stick, send it to KS3 labs in Lubbock, Texas. They can DNA sequence potentially 5,000 different bacteria. And back when we had this test before, it's been off the market 2 years. It's been being rebuilt. I would see bacteria from the oral cavity routinely in patients who had chronic degenerative disease. In fact, 3 out of 5 Lou Gehrig's patients had treponema denticola, which is from root canal teeth infected sockets. I have seen ALS reversed 5 times. Have 2 or 3 of them right now we're working with, and they all have raging dental infections.
So what would your sense be about removing the mercury amalgam, the filling?
I am totally into getting mercury out of the body, but not until after you get rid of the bigger problem, which is the infections. Because think about it. Radiation creates free radicals, right? What does a chronic infection cause? Free radicals. So some things we don't have a lot of control over. I can't control the level of radiation on the California coast. But if I've got a root canal too spewing poison into my body, it may be 10 times the problem that the radiation is in that area. So I want to lower my total body burden of inflammation, of infection, of free radical damage. Because we have control over that, right?
And are there those biological dentists here in Central Texas?
There are probably 3 or 4 within an hour of Austin. There's another 3 or 4 in the San Antonio area.
And do you have them?
There's 2 in Marble Falls, Texas. If you go to my website, hopewellness.com or drlovemuffin.com, I'm just kidding you. That's a joke.
With your hot smoking wife.
With my hot smoking wife, yes. HopeWellnessCenter.com and HopeWellness.com. Yeah, one's our domestic site. One is the out-of-the-country site. And so if you just click on information, scroll down the links until you see dental links. And we've highlighted several in the Texas Hill Country. But also you can go to that association link and type in your zip code and find the nearest dentist.
I think I've seen one of them in Marble Falls already.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really totally enthralled with at the moment, more than other things at the moment, because I'm always enthralled with something, sometimes 3 or 4 things a day, is a cone beam scan. We've had many people that we suspected had a dental infection, but we couldn't prove it, to correlate it with their multiple sclerosis, so their fibromyalgia, or their chronic fatigue, or their cancer. So we've now started doing cone beams, C-O-N-E-B-E-A-M, scan. And they are common among dental implant dentists and cosmetic dentists. And you can just go in there and say, look, I want to do a full mouth cone beam scan. And then you can send it to one of the dentists. You can, on our website, just say, call them and say, look, I want to schedule a consult. They'll go over the cone beam scan with you and tell you if they see a problem. 7 out of 7 in a row, we found dental pathology. In one case was a Lou Gehrig's patient, ALS. Her whole sinus cavity was occluded because of a root canal tooth here in the upper, right under that sinus, that caused a granulomatous mass. Looked like cancer. Occluded, covered it up, plugged up the sinus cavity with a mass induced by the root canal tooth. So the cone beam shows soft tissue. X-rays do not. X-ray did not pick up any of those socket infections. Had a Parkinson's patient from New York. Did the cone beam on him, his right hand shaking, and he had really bad brain fog. The root that showed that he had a abscess tooth and a big old cyst up in his sinuses. Monday last week, they pulled that tooth out, cleaned the socket out. Within 4 or 5 hours, the brain fog was gone. And that happens very regularly. So cone beam is a way to stop guessing. If you think you may have an infected socket causing some immune suppression, causing free radical damage, and you want to minimize your chances of getting cancer, do a cone beam and go to one of the dentists that are on our website, and they'll schedule a consult with you and go over that. So your question, sir.
I've got a question about elevated PSA scores.
Yes.
What do you recommend? I know guys who go and get these needle biopsies. They stick 12 needles through their
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Me, the, what do you recommend?
The question is, with PSA, PSA is prostate-specific antigen. It is, by the way, not specific at all. It's called that, but it's there's actually PSA tissues in the lungs and other parts of the body that can create prostate-specific antigen. So it's kind of stupid to call it prostate-specific. I had a case a month ago. The guy comes to see me. He says his PSA a year or two earlier was 5. Hey, that's reason for concern. A month ago, it was 10-something. And so he's very concerned. They're wanting to do a biopsy, which in the prostate is a very, very uncomfortable thing. And they're going to take and punch a bunch of needles through the prostate and pull tissue out. If it was cancerous, what is that going to do?
Spread.
It's going to spread it. Isn't really the definition of a biopsy the intentional metastasis of a potential cancer? I mean, that's it. That you're trying to metastasize it to the needle through the tissue so you can send it to the lab. And if it is cancer, you just seeded it. I have another slide presentation that shows studies that prove that fact scientifically. So the answer is no. I don't like PSA. It's a nice indicator that we need to look. But here's the case. PSA is elevated for 72 hours after ejaculation. So I asked, I explained that to the couple, and they said, oh, that would explain it. A month later, after doing nothing, a little diet change, re-ran the test, it's at 5 again. It was always at 5. So anything that can cause inflammation in the prostate is going to give you an elevated PSA. Had a guy a dozen years ago that had elevated PSA. Thought he had prostate cancer. He refused biopsy. Came to Mexico. We gave him an IV antibiotic with 5 cc's of DMSO in the bag to increase penetration. And his PSA went to normal a dozen years ago. Has never been high since. Simply an infection. Mycobacterium, mycoplasma, love the prostate. Chlamydia pneumoniae also can get in the prostate tissue. So, a lot of infections. If you want to know, is it cancer, I would highly recommend that you do the OncoBlot test.